When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Man there trying to stop Drogba getting himself into further trouble.
It's a fucking disgrace.
Oh, it's not a bad ball for Pelé on the right side. It's Carlos Alberto. And what a great goal that was! Carlos Alberto!
Maradona just walked away from Huddle then. Maldano, Martin.
Met de balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal. Heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan. Dennis Bergkamp.
Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp.
Oh! Frank de Boer speelt de bal naar Dennis Bergkamp. Die neemt de bal feilloos aan. En die schiet de bal erin.
So hello and welcome back to the Scores Thriller podcast. We're here to talk about the very kind of boring and mundane round of last 16 games where everything went to form and, you know, there was not too many storylines. Sebastian, what game was maybe, what game grabbed your attention?
You know, it had to be the best game of the round, had to be Ukraine against Sweden, had to be the most exciting, most amount of goals, you know, most amount of quality, obviously.
Amount of time spent on the floor expected.
Wow. Most amount of almost dead bodies on the field.
The expected stoppages stat for that game will be.
Yeah. What's the XI? Expected injuries for expected ruptured knee ligaments and head injuries and all that. Yeah. No, that was probably maybe the worst one of the round, which it was still an exciting game. And that's what made this round of 16 so kind of stupid in a way. I think what's great about it more than anything else is that we spend all year always talking about tactics and how this team's doing this week and how they set up. And I think this round of 16, there were a lot of games where all of that just went out the window and where it's just about surviving or it's just about coming up with moments of quality. So,
All right.
I mean, it was incredible.
Okay, given the shirt you're wearing, I think the first game we have to start with France. And did you see? Because I think a lot of people kind of maybe with hindsight think, well, okay, this could have been coming. Because I think with this France team, there's been periods where they haven't really performed well that much, and it's just kind of been a 10-minute burst where they kind of show their quality, and eventually they maybe get caught out. But did you see it being Switzerland? That being the team to knock them out?
No, not at all. And I mean, look, I think the most disappointing thing about France being knocked out of the tournament is that when they play, and we've seen it in flashes in every single match this tournament, when they play sort of at their highest level, there's no one else like them. They can do things that no other team is capable of replicating. So it's sad to see a team that's capable of giving off such a show go out of the tournament, but the Swiss were good enough. They did very well. I mean, they played great, but France, oh my goodness. I just don't think they were very good at all. Aside from a 20-minute spell where they looked untouchable.
Yeah.
So incredible, incredible game in that sense. And huge credit to Switzerland for that mentality, that they knew that they had the French in trouble. And so it was just like, just keep prodding and it'll go.
I think what was so incredible about this game is that, you know, sometimes these big tournaments, you'll get big upsets and it'll be the weaker team will score an early goal and then they'll just like defend for the rest of the game. And then you had Switzerland, they had that lead for so long, then they get the penalty. We think, okay, and they miss it. And you think, oh, now the momentum. And then France get those two quick fire goals and they score a little bit later. Okay. And you're like, okay, well, that's the narrative that it's going to be of this game. It's that Switzerland gave France a bit of a scare. You know, they can go home with their pride intact, so to speak, and then, you know, France will move on to the next round. But for that, like what happened to France in the last 10 minutes? They just fell apart.
You know, I actually don't think the last 10 minutes was much different from the rest of the game, aside from the 20 minutes. From the moment Hugo Lloris saves the penalty until Pogba scores, France are playing basically the style, tactics, pace, everything. They're playing the way they should. Outside of that 20 minutes, I thought Switzerland looked like scoring almost every time they went forward.
Especially
the whole game,
when they went down their left on the, there was every time they attacked on the left.
Yeah, at Pavard's side, I think he had a really, really rough game. But yeah, to me, it's actually really simple. My way of looking at the France game was, if you don't press a team, and you give them time on the ball, they're going to look for their danger players in danger areas. And I think you could see that France don't press from the front. Their front three don't go and engage. And Paul Pogba holds in position. The problem with all this is that you ended up neutralizing your best asset, which is N'Golo Kanté. Yeah. He is not a six that you just sit in there. He's someone you have go and chase the ball. And we didn't see that at all from him, aside from that little section where they started trying to win balls back. So I think Switzerland were great in the sense that they just stayed super positive. But France, all tournament long, that tactic of sort of laying in two sort of very strict lines of four, it felt a little outdated, to be honest.
Yeah, I think there's a reason why, like, Granit Xhaka was able to play as well as he is. Like, I think everyone who's kind of watched Premier League kind of knows the limitations of his game, that he's not the most mobile, but if you give him space, he can just sort of sit there and play these really, I mean, the pass that he played for the third goal was just sensational. I think, like, there was a reason that he was able to play that well.
Yep, I totally agree. And I mean, that's the only thing for me, I'm like, it's too bad. I mean, I don't know, Switzerland, they really deserved it. They didn't show many deficiencies at all, but what France showed was, all we have to do is go into fourth or fifth gear for 15 minutes, and this is what you see. Mm-hmm. So it's disappointing to see a team that's capable of that kind of show go out of the tournament. But at the same time, the surprises are part of the show of the tournament as well. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. But
let's touch on the other game that day, the Croatia-Spain game. I mean, for me watching this, it was kind of, Spain looked so comfortable, and then all of a sudden Croatia just kind of burst into life right at the end and had those two quick goals to send it to extra time. Very similar to the other game that day.
Incredibly similar.
Yeah.
What did you think of the pattern of the game, actually? Because I thought really until Spain took the lead, it was incredibly difficult to pick, at least from my perspective, who might win this game. Because the own goal is amazing, by the way. It's incredible.
Have you seen, I'm sure you've seen the stat, I'm sorry, everyone has, but there's been as many own goals in this tournament as there has been in every Euros through history put together.
Yeah. there was something, that stat's amazing. I think someone else talked about the stat of missed penalties is something as well, somewhere in that freakish zone, which... And the own goals, that's a tough one to explain.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough one to explain.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I was quite impressed by Spain in some ways. Like, the way that they had this freak goal and go behind. Like, up until that goal, I thought, okay, well, Spain are very much in control of this. Like, Croatia, it looks kind of dangerous on the counterattack, but I feel like Spain were kind of being the driving force in that game. And then when they got to, once they got ahead, I was like, I don't see it. Croatia causing much trouble whatsoever. And then Croatia had that huge burst at this to level it up at the end of normal time, and then at the start of extra time they really had the chance to take the lead, and then they just sort of, I feel like they just ran out of legs completely.
Well, it's moments, isn't it? I mean, if Croatia score early in extra time, I mean, you know what? Actually, it doesn't even matter. You can't say if that happens, then this might have, because all we were shown was you have no idea what's going to happen next. And I think that's what was so amazing about that day is you get 2-3-3 draws in 90 minutes, another game that goes into extra time, two goals are scored. Tip of the cap to Alvaro Morata for what, I mean, it's an unbelievable goal. It's a terrific, terrific goal.
So I was reading someone on the Irish commentary, he said that he miscontrolled it. And I was like, it's clearly like he's bounced it and then he's like moved it away. I don't know how he possibly was. I thought it was a brilliant touchdown. Like,
so did Federico Chiesa for his goal for Italy. That was a miscontrol as well. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, kudos to him for after everything he seems to have like been through this tournament. It's very much a, and it's also, I think it's still going to continue, right? If this in the next round against Switzerland, if he doesn't score early, then this kind of pressure is going to build again on him.
You know, actually, one thing I do love regarding Morata and there are a few other players is there are certain players in teams where the coaches really are sticking by a certain player, even though maybe a lot of people are like, why is this person in the squad that maybe they shouldn't be? You know, Southgate's done that with a few. I mean, a lot of coaches are sort of notorious for having a few players that they trust and rely on, and they always put them in these big games and then they tend to deliver. Yeah. And I thought that the amount of support that Luis Enrique has given to Alvaro Morata throughout this tournament has been great. I think before the second game, people were like, is he going to play? And he said, listen, it'll be Alvaro Morata and 10 others to start. I mean, that really backs your striker, and it's hopefully paying off for him because that was terrific. It was a great goal.
Yeah. No, I thought like Croatia were good in periods, but I think they just didn't have quite as much as Spain had, especially in extra time. They were just kind of were able to take control of it. And then speaking about the game yesterday, which I think the England-Germany game, if you're going to say, you said at the start, maybe the Ukraine-Sweden game was the worst game of the round. Probably the second worst was the England-Germany game from yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's an easy award. Yeah. Easy award to give it second worst of the round. Although it was incredibly tense.
Yeah,
and I think Wembley, the tension in Wembley, you could feel it. You could feel it wherever you're watching the match. And so I think the occasion was, it outweighed the football.
Yeah, I think quite often with that, I mean, I always like games like this where maybe the game isn't quite as exciting. I'm always like very invested in it anyway, just because you know it's so tense. And also you kind of know that the first goal is probably going to decide it. And I think that was kind of the case where like, England and Germany kind of nullified each other quite a bit, but England, I think, definitely were the better side and deserved to move on.
I think so. I think so. I was really happy to see England just, I think, put that performance in for that game. I think that was important.
Yeah.
It's going to be very interesting to see what they decide to do against Ukraine, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, I mean, we can get to it. Like, whether he switches things up, right, or whether they decide this is the system that he wants to use.
Yep, it's going to be very interesting.
Interesting. Okay, and then let's touch on a couple others. There was the Dutch game against Czech Republic, which feels like years ago, but...
I know. Like, 3 days ago.
Okay. When you were watching this and De Ligt did the handball thing, did you immediately think he's gotten away with it, or did you? Because for me, when I saw it, I was like, oh, maybe he just accidentally hit his arm. And then I saw his reaction, and I saw after it happens, the referee immediately gets kind of surrounded by the Czech player, and so they're like, check the VAR, like he's clearly like deliberately handed it. And I could see, you kind of see this kind of slight fear and guilt in De Ligt's eyes. And then I was like, okay, there's more than this than actually accidentally hitting his arm on his way to the ground.
Well, I think for me, it was as soon as I saw a replay, I was he's cooked. He's dead. It's over. I mean, because actually in real time, I actually thought he literally fell on the ball.
Yeah.
And exactly. You know, now what he should have done, and what I want to do, if I could, I would send Matthijs de Ligt that little clip of Phil Jones falling to the floor
and then heading
away with his arms like down by his side, and he's literally on the ground and he heads the ball out of Giroud's path. And in that video, you can see Giroud being like, oh my God, I could have scored. But this fish decided to nod the ball as on the ground. That is what he should have done. He should have dove on the ball in some way. It's an amazing moment of panic from a player to actually, I mean, he reaches for it and pulls it behind him.
It's like a basketball player trying to like stop it from going out of bounds, just kind of reaching and pulling it back.
I mean, it's really, you know, as a coach of young players, it's that moment where a ball goes in the air to them and they have not thought, okay, I should take it down with my chest or I should header it. And it starts coming and they're staring at it and they just put their hands in the air and catch the ball.
I had that fear quite often when I play football, but luckily I'm the goalkeeper, so I can use my hands.
Well, that definitely helps. No, that match, as soon as that happened, I think you knew the Dutch were in trouble because they didn't come into the game playing with that sort of high tempo. We're creating chances. Oh, we're a man down. Don't worry. We're going to keep doing the same thing. You're just the Czech Republic. They weren't playing that way. So as soon as they went a man down, you kind of knew that it was going to be a problem. And then the organization defensively after that, how do you not change the way you're set up when you're down to 10 men? I mean, they were all over the place.
Yeah.
It was bizarre. And Daniel Malin really should have scored. Was it 1 minute or so?
Yeah, it was like literally like 60 seconds before the red card. They had
it was a pretty wild run too. He just came through the midfield, touched the ball, and just ran by three people. You're like, how did he just look like a steeplechase? You know, the guy just broke out of the gates. But that was a major surprise. Maybe it shouldn't have been. I don't know. Do you think that we gave the Dutch a little too much credit from their group stage?
I think people before the tournament were, you know, that they're kind of disorganized, and then they were slightly kind of taken in by the kind of classic Dutch free-flowing football that we saw in the group stage. But I think there was still, even in the Ukraine game, in the first game, if the signs were there that they're kind of vulnerable to a team like the Czech Republic, who are not star talented, but they're clearly like well organized and they can take advantage of a high quality team, which is not quite as well set up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, who would know that Scotland's group turned out to be, I mean, with three of the quarterfinalists and nobody from Group F.
Yeah. Well, that's why they call it the group of death. They're all out.
They're all out.
Incredible.
Okay. All right. Before we move on to the quarterfinals, let's just touch on the last two games of the round of 16, the Wales Denmark game and the Italy Austria game. I think the Wales-Denmark game, I think beforehand I was maybe too up on Wales' chances because I was maybe still taken in from the, you know, the 2016 run and all that, the beating Belgium took this. But then I think the closer I got to the kickoff and just like looking at the clubs that the Danish players play for, and then Wales have kind of championship reserves and like below, like on their team, and just relying on Ramsey and Bale, who's kind of past his best, I think it was quite clear that Denmark were a step above.
Yeah, look, I did the same thing. I got a little bit high on the whole Wales thing from 2016, and also the way they've sort of stepped through this tournament. The first game they weren't good, then they were excellent against Turkey, and then, you know, I mean, the way they've moved through, it looked as if they had a very clear, simple plan and identity. And then the problem that I was sort of wrestling with Denmark was, are they going to have? I mean, this is a massive emotional roller coaster for them. Are they going to be just brought back down to earth?
Are they just going to run out of gas?
And wow. I mean, that was an amazing performance from Denmark. And I have to say, it's the one thing that needs to be mentioned here is that Wales, if you look at their travel, I think, who was it? One of their players at the end of the game mentioned
this. Yeah, Gunter was very angry about the... out in Baku and then in Amsterdam for this game, how I think there was 15,000 people traveled from here in Copenhagen to it, where they weren't really allowed to have any, there wasn't very many Welsh fans there as well. So
yeah, and that is something that I think is a big caveat in this tournament, because we'll talk about the Belgians, but they really traveled a lot as well. So it's an interesting one. We talked about that in the last episode we did together, but now we're seeing how some teams really feel like they kind of got a short hand in this. And tough We're not used to looking at schedules of a tournament and going, oh, wait, which city in Europe is this in? You know, where the,
And also, like, I mean, it feels kind of mad, like, that, okay, some teams had their games in Baku in the group stage, but now Czech Republic and Denmark have to go all the way out there now for their quarterfinal.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then...
Well, then, go for it.
No, I was just going to say, looking at the other game, like the Italy-Austria game, I feel like this was the kind of first game where Italy had a bit of a hiccup where they kind of had breezed through so far, and then actually Austria played really well and could have quite easily won the game.
Yeah, I was hoping that that Arnautovic goal would stand because I think it would have made that last 20 minutes really, really, really incredible. But yep, Italy pushed to the edge. You know, they have some real quality. Enrico Chiesa's goal is amazing. It's absolutely incredible. And then Pessina's goal, there's a carbon copy. Marcel Sabitzer has almost the exact same chance just a few minutes later, and he doesn't take it. And I think that was the big difference. And Italy, you know, now that France are out, Portugal out, Germany out, they're looking better and better and better. And, I mean, you know, if we talk about Belgium, Portugal as well, because, I mean, Belgium look beat up. I mean, they look really wounded right now. If De Bruyne is out, if Hazard's limping around.
Which I think is confirmed. I think I was just reading that Martinez has confirmed that both of those guys are out of.
The rest?
Yeah, right. At least the quarterfinal.
Yeah, and that game was a messy game as well. It was, the goal from Thorgan Hazard's great. I love it because, and I don't like to criticize goalkeepers for those ones. I just like to say, that was a good hard shot.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. But
it moved a bit.
It did move. It did move. It's those new balls, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that now it really does kind of call into question everyone's idea of Belgium being sort of a favorite. So, you know, as we look to, when we look at the next round, that's a tight one.
All right, let's jump into it. Okay,
let's do it. Yeah,
we've gone through the last 16, so we're gonna now make a bit of a predictions for the quarterfinal. So let's look at the first one, Belgium, Italy. I have on my little notes, I have Italy to nudge it, based mainly on Belgium missing Hazard and De Bruyne, and I think feel like the Belgian defense probably can be got at.
Yeah, I agree, and I think to me this will come down to Mancini's team selection and substitutes, right? If the personnel are the right people to hurt this Belgian team without De Bruyne and without Hazard, you're looking at a normal high level side, but without X factor players that are going to win the game for you. Exactly. But there's not that spine that just terrifies you. So I'm with you on that. I think Italy, they've got the team spirit. Everything's been going well for them, and I think that game against Austria is excellent for them for the next round. They had to worry, they had to suffer. Right. Yeah, exactly. Because had it been too easy, I really would think I would have chosen Belgium for this match had Italy easily walked by Austria.
All right, score prediction. I've got 1-0 Italy.
Yeah. I'll go 2-0 Italy.
All right.
2-0.
Okay. All right, then let's talk about the other game on Friday, Switzerland and Spain. My worry for Switzerland will be that I think quite often in these tournaments you see teams who have the underdogs, they'll have one big performance where they kind of lay it all out, and then a few days later they have to kind of reach those levels again, and then it's tough for them. So I think for that reason I feel like Spain might be quite might win this one comfortably.
Yeah, I think Spain should win this game, and since Spain all of a sudden started scoring goals, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to plonk Spain 3-1. And the reason
why I have
oh, nice. There we go. The reason why though is I don't want to be harsh or unfair on the Swiss, but to be completely frank with you, when France played at their level, they made them look a very average side, and I don't think the Swiss have really pulled up a whole bunch of trees this tournament when they've been under real pressure.
But that's what made
Spain are going to put them under some real pressure. So,
that's what made the France game so surprising, because I'd watched Italy play play Switzerland, and they were just tearing them apart in the first half. Like, Switzerland could barely make three passes together, just couldn't live with like the intensity of a top level team. So that's kind of like, how are they going to, if Spain really go at them like they did, I think, in periods against Croatia, I'd really fear
for this. Spain are going to try and win the ball high. Honestly, against Switzerland, you have to go win the ball high. I listened to a guy on French on L'Equipe's YouTube feed. This guy was talking about, he's like, why we aren't trying to win the ball up high and then give it to Mbappe and Griezmann, these guys up the field. I don't know. And apparently, actually, it's that some of the players went to Deschamps and told him, we prefer starting from a deeper position. Well, I'm sorry, as coach, you got to be like, screw that. We're high pressing and we're stealing the ball from these guys. Spain, that is what they do. They're excellent at ball recovery. I just don't think Switzerland are going to be able to live with them. I really don't. I don't think we're going to see a repeat. So,
yeah.
And sorry, we're out to scoring now. Sorry, Switzerland. Sorry.
Sorry. All right. Okay. So that's the two Friday games. Now on to Saturday, the early kickoff. Czech Republic against Denmark. People are beginning to get very, very excited in Copenhagen.
As they should. But this is almost almost the same thing as the Wales game. It's can you go and score the goals? Because the Czech Republic, you can't leave them hanging around. But I think Denmark.
I think they're really going to try and play this game like they did against Scotland and just kind of sit deep and try and get something on the break or some kind of set piece or something like this and see if that works for them.
Yeah, you know, maybe not, though. Their confidence has to be going really high right now. They might be thinking, you know, we can take the game to these guys, but they're going to be very careful. And it's hard to know what you're going to get from Denmark in terms of the explosion of energy. Here's the thing, though. Finally, for the first time, they're not basically playing at home. But look, I'll take Denmark at 2-1.
Okay, I've gone 2-0 to Denmark. So one better. And then finally, to round off the weekend, I want to believe in some small way that there is hope for Ukraine. But honestly, after watching 120 minutes of them last night, I it was great for them, and I was very pleased that they had their moment, but Can you see a way of that Ukraine team putting much pressure on England?
No, I really can't. I wanted Ukraine to go through because I like the team. I love Shevchenko. Yeah. I like, you know, and they're a great story. For anyone who hasn't really paid any attention to Ukraine over the last 2 years, he's completely had to revolutionize the side because at some of the games that they play, they had like 16 players out due to COVID, something like that. So he had to bring in a whole bunch of guys to get their debuts. And now a bunch of them are in the side. And so
having never managed at any level before.
Exactly. And so I love what's going on there, but you watch that game. I mean, they looked like scoring only a few times and they didn't really seem to have a whole lot of ideas going forward. I mean, Yarmolenko's pass to Zinchenko is pure artistry. Nice. That was incredible.
Yeah. Also, the small moments. The pass to pick out Yarmolenko, the kind of cross ball to him was really nice too. But
yeah.
Apart from that. No.
But the you know, tiny moments. And this is an England team that hasn't given up a goal yet. I mean, and so what I'm hoping for is that England actually show us something, because it would be really frustrating to see an England team inch their way to a final by winning just 1-2-0 the whole way. That would be, I feel like if you're going to be champions of a tournament, at some point you need to show something extra. I think this is the match that England, in my opinion, should go and express themselves a little bit. So I'm going 3-0 England.
I want to say 1-0 Ukraine, but I've gone 3-0 England too.
Look, it's the Denmark one that I think England are in trouble. If Denmark get by the Czech Republic and England get by Ukraine, I think that is such an exciting.
Because I think
that one's so tasty.
Also, I think Denmark are good enough that they definitely can cause England problems, but they're also not one of these top level sides where it's kind of like the pressure will be off for England. Like, I think at Wembley against Denmark in a Euro semi-final, there'll be so much weight and expectation that they have to like take this game. So it could kind of definitely play into Denmark's hands or the Czech Republic. Yeah. Let's not write them off yet.
Well, no, yeah, we'll see. But either way, that's a matchup that I really, really like right there. So, but I'm with you. I don't really like doing the whole, oh, let's do the whole bracket, because you make one mistake and then you look like a total mug. You have to redo everything.
We just do it round by round. Okay, but which of those four games are you most looking forward to, and which one are you least looking forward to? Let's finish off.
Least looking forward to, we'll start there. I think it's just the England-Ukraine game, because I think that's the one that's the most sort of like a formality at this point. It's the largest gap in class and sort of capability. And I'm not looking forward to it for the sole reason that if England don't win, you know, convincingly, it's a little bit like, oh, really?
Yeah,
come on, you know? Most excited for, you know, I think on paper, the one you say is Belgium-Italy. Yeah. But I actually am going to go for the hipster option here and take Denmark-Czech Republic, because what the Danes right now are irresistible. They're irresistible. It's too much fun to watch. Mm-hmm. Everyone else now has something big to lose of the big teams. I think, you know, do you see it differently? Is there what game really jumps out to you?
I kind of agree, because I feel like Belgium, Italy won't be the most exciting game. I think it could be. I'm super interested to see if Switzerland can in some way kind of match that performance against France, whether they're able to sort of bring that kind of fight and intensity again against a Spanish team, which, you know, is really looking hot going forward now. So I'm quite interested for that one. And then I kind of definitely agree about the Ukraine England game. Like it just does feel. But I think also I kind of would have said the same about the last 16 France-Switzerland game. Like that would have been one of the games I was least looking forward to, because I've kind of felt, oh, well, it's kind of a formality of whenever I watch Switzerland at major tournaments, they're never exactly the most swashbuckling side. So I was like, okay. But so then it definitely can, it's a tournament of surprises.
Very much so. Come on. I mean, for you, you live in Copenhagen. Explain what's going on here with this. I mean, this is... I'm sure they're not just very excited, but sort of what is the sort of level of?
I mean, it's going through the roof now. Like definitely when it's kind of became clear that this would be after they weren't really looking ahead too much, but like after the Wales game and kind of looking, okay, now it's against Czech Republic, who they can kind of view as being the better. And then this kind of like wave of positivity, which surrounds the team, like the coach is very much so someone described him as a vibes man, and he gives off good vibes, and it's definitely,
I love it.
A very, very good feeling behind the team. So I can see them I think if they potentially get into a semi-final, then it will just go further.
I think it's always interesting, because at this stage I think a lot of teams start to feel that it's their destiny maybe to win it. And so who's got the story really all over them? And Denmark it'd be a lovely story if Denmark won this Euros. It really would be. So yeah, it's going to be a really interesting quarterfinal. I'm hoping that Spain, Switzerland, like you can be, look, if Spain can just treat us to the best football in terms of crazy games for the rest of the tournament, I'm good with that. Just every time, you know, go and score, give us seven goals.
I just want final question. You coach youth football. Have you ever had your goalkeeper do something as mad as Simon did? And how do you pick them up afterwards?
Youth goalkeepers absolutely do things. There's a lot of interesting examples. I'll give you two small examples. One, we do pass back to our goalkeepers. We do use our goalkeepers. We build out of the back. And I had a goalkeeper get a little nervous when we were under a lot of pressure and basically take two touches on a goal kick. He took one to put the ball out of his feet. And then it's an indirect free kick yards from your goal. And you're just like, no.
Oh, no.
And then I think one of the saddest ones I've ever seen, so we play on these, you know, artificial, these turf fields.
Yeah.
But in the United States, one thing you see is a lot of lines because they also play American football,
like lacrosse. And all stuff. Yeah, yeah.
So you have all those lines out there. And this kid went over to the top of the penalty area to punt the ball and walked 2 yards out of it.
Just kept going. Because
he thought that the penalty area line was the white one just a couple yards ahead. Instead, he'd just strolled out of it. The referee gave him a red card.
Oh, my God.
It's a 12-year-old kid. And so it wasn't, I was just sort of an assistant. I was watching the game. This kid was flush with tears for it. So what do you do with goalkeepers? I think the most important thing is to let them know that, like, whatever. I think every mistake a goalkeeper makes, in my opinion, is whatever, because around the pitch, everyone else needs to do their job to cover for them. Yeah. So I just always tell goalies, look, like, nightmare situations are going to happen to you. And then the other important thing is, does the team support the goalkeeper? And I think Unai Simon, you saw this, I think two or three of the defenders were on him with an instance, you know, patting him on the back.
Well, I thought it was really nice.
That was really great.
What was quite noticeable, I think there's like a ball, like maybe like 5 or 10 minutes afterwards, and there was the ball came over the top, and he was very quick off his line, like cut it out and like cleared it. And like a very noticeable was like the reaction of the other like Spanish players, like to like encourage him and like get him like focused back in the game and support him. And I mean, he made like some really good saves in the second half as well.
Well, and there was, I think, early in the second half, the first ball that was played back to him, the Croatian fans were right behind him, and they all went, oh.
I thought it was quite noticeable, like, the pressing, just stuff, like, the Croatian team was like, oh, wait, maybe he'll do it again.
But, you know, this is a testament to the Spanish style of no matter what, you go for it, and you stick to your guns. You play that way because I think most people be like, stop playing it back to the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
But you know, they just kept rattling balls into them all match. And I think that is a testament to the Spanish style. It's something that they talk about a lot, that they don't let go of those morals and their values and the way they play. They're like, we will continue. If you make a mistake, that's it. It's over. We continue. And I think that was a really good example because his saves, like you said, that he made late in the game were exceptional. And you only do that if the motivation, you know, the belief is still there.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, great stuff there. It was incredible.
All right. Well, if the quarterfinals are half as good as the last 16, we're in for a treat, I think.
You know, we're getting to that stage of the competition where I start being sad that it's almost over.
No.
You know, that's what happens after the last 16. I'm like, I can actually count the amount of games on like both my hands. And I'm like, oh no. But
yeah. Like incredible. I said to you before we started, I'm very much, I agree, but I'm also like, well, okay, it's good that today I don't have to go out drinking this evening. I can have a break.
Well, and you're in Copenhagen, you're just sitting here going, how big is this wave going to crash in this city? Because you know, you have to basically go ahead and contractually sign that you will be partying for the next 3 weeks if Denmark win the whole competition. That's just it. You're just in. You're in the pool.
All right, man. Enjoy your day. Thank you so much for joining.
You too, Alex. Great stuff. I'll see you soon.
All right. Talk to you soon, man. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Podcast Network.